I think it's a morale booster because it sort of gives us the confidence that we can get on with the vaccination program.
India reaches milestone of administering 1 billion COVID-19 vaccines. It's Friday, October 22nd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Mimi Heibels in Washington. You'll also find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, marathon COVID-19 lockdown ends in Australia. Global supply chain disruption forces U.S. consumers to go without. UN agency launches program to restore Afghan livelihoods. As North Korea launches missiles, South Koreans shrug. Discovery of ephedra plant adds to Afghanistan's addiction woes. It's all on today's VOA Asia. India has administered 1 billion doses of the COVID-19 vaccine, a significant milestone for an immunization drive that had struggled to get off the ground earlier this year. As Anjana Pasricha for VOA reports from New Delhi, with its domestic program making progress, the world's largest vaccine maker has resumed vaccine exports.
The celebrations erupted after India finished the countdown to administering 1 billion doses of COVID-19 vaccines. Thursday's milestone marked a key turnaround from some months ago when people scrambled for vaccines as the country battled a deadly second wave. Prime Minister Narendra Modi called it a historic occasion.
To combat the biggest pandemic in 100 years, the country now has a strong protective shield of 1 billion doses. This achievement belongs to India, to every citizen of India.
There is still a big gap to be bridged. Only 30% of its adult population is fully inoculated. Tens of millions have yet to get the second dose. Still, the billion doses mark significant progress in the country that has had 34 million COVID-19 infections, the second highest in the world.
I think it's a morale booster because it sort of gives us the confidence that we can get on with the vaccination program without having resistance from the people and with a machinery that is reasonably efficient and reaching out to different parts of India.
The drive gathered momentum after the government helped companies ramp up production. The government had been criticized earlier for not securing enough doses, even though the country is the world's largest vaccine maker. Officials hope to cover all eligible people by the year end. In rural areas, health workers walk or use boats to bring vaccines to remote villages. Cities have seen long lines outside inoculation centers.
I took the vaccine for my safety. When there is no proper cure, then it is better to take the vaccine and increase one's immunity.
It is difficult to get a job if you do not take a vaccine. Everyone says get inoculated first.
Experts say vaccine hesitancy did not become a stumbling block as in other countries.
There is no anti-vaccine phobia in terms of suspecting that this is going to be a very dangerous vaccine that's going to harm them in a very many ways.
The billion dose mark comes as daily new infections decline to the lowest in 7 months and much of the country has reopened. With more vaccine stockpiles, India is resuming exports. The first batches have gone to Nepal, Bangladesh, Myanmar and Iran. It is likely to send more in the coming months, helping countries in Africa and Asia whose immunization programs have been struggling as India focused on its own drive. Anjana Pasricha for VOA News, New Delhi.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. In other news, nearly 200 people have died in floods and landslides in India and Nepal, including several families swept away or crushed in their homes by avalanches of mud and rocks. Nepal recorded the sharpest rise in casualties, with officials saying that 88 people have died, among them a family of six, including three children, whose house was obliterated by a sudden avalanche of soil and debris. In the Himalayan northern Indian state of Uttarakhand, 55 people were confirmed Thursday to have died, five from a single family whose house was buried by a massive landslide. Another 42 people have been killed in the southern coastal state of Kerala, which has been battered by heavy rain since last Friday. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Bomb blast kills 5 Pakistan security personnel. Civilian killings in Indian Kashmir drive minority Hindus to flee homes. Regional powers back aid for Afghanistan, press Taliban on inclusivity. Moscow hosts international talks with Taliban to discuss Afghan crisis. Former Australia PM urges government to strengthen support for Taiwan. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. A COVID-19 lockdown in the Australian city of Melbourne, officially the world's most locked down city, restrictions on leaving home are lifting, and the nighttime curfew is being scrapped because the state of Victoria has met its double dose vaccination target of 70%. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports for VOA.
It's a record that no one wants. Since the pandemic began, Melbourne, a city of 5 million people, has had 6 lockdowns. In total, it spent more than 260 days under some of Australia's toughest COVID-19 restrictions. It recently passed Buenos Aires in Argentina as the world's most locked-down city. Pubs, cafes and hairdressers will reopen in Melbourne. The new freedoms, however, apply only to the fully vaccinated. As the lockdown ends, the state of Victoria has recorded one of its highest daily totals of new coronavirus cases, with 2,232 infections and 12 fatalities reported Thursday. Nancy Baxter, an epidemiologist at the University of Melbourne, says the community still needs to be cautious.
We all need to use our heads when we're getting out of lockdown. People deserve some freedoms. They should enjoy some new freedoms, but they do need to think about how much COVID is out there. In Melbourne right now, we have as much COVID as they have in all of Spain. So, you know, if people kind of don't feel comfortable doing all the things that, you know, their friends are inviting them to do, I think it's important for people not to feel like they're boring or they're afraid.
Masks are still mandatory both indoors and outdoors for all people in Victoria State. Residents of Melbourne must continue to work from home if they can, and travel between the city and regional areas is only allowed with a permit. More restrictions will end, including the reopening of most shops, when the state of Victoria's vaccination rate hits 80%. Lockdowns in Sydney and Canberra have also recently been lifted. Australia has recorded 150,000 coronavirus cases and more than 1,500 deaths since the pandemic began. More than 70% of the population has been fully vaccinated. International travel, heavily restricted in Australia since its borders were closed to most foreign nationals in March 2020, could resume as soon as November. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney, Australia.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, global supply chain disruption forces American consumers to go without. Happening in Asia, a volcano in southern Japan erupted with a massive column of gray smoke billowing into the sky. The warning level for Mount Aso was raised to 3 on a scale of 5, warning hikers and residents to avoid the mountain. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're so glad you decided to join us on VOA Asia. China is the center of manufacturing for the world. So when COVID-19 hit, manufacturing was disrupted. Producing delays gave way to shipping delays. Now it's difficult and sometimes impossible to get certain items. VOA's Carolyn Prasuti takes a look at what is missing.
Lunch is on at the Green Pig Bistro. It could shape up to be the busiest Saturday in the Virginia restaurant's 10-year history. Customers are back. But beyond the dishes, other things are missing for head chef Tracy O'Grady, an induction burner.
We've been waiting for the part for 2.5 months.
And 4 months for a wine cooler.
It could be on a boat. It could still be in the factory. It could be at a port. It could be on a semi.
COVID-19 has created a major delay in products from China. Also, bottlenecks at American ports have forced dozens of container ships to sit offshore. With no workers to unload and no available warehouse space, there is no path to get products to consumers. It seems most Americans are waiting for something.
Our building has an HVAC system that needs repair, and we've been waiting 2 weeks for the parts, and they're still not here. Same thing with the hot tub on the rooftop building.
These moms worry about Christmas gifts.
I've been trying to get the PS5 for over a year, and there's like blogs that are like where you can find it, and they like come up and say, it's available, and by the time you go to the site, they're all gone.
Add to that bicycles, cars, sneakers, and electronics.
Screens, tablets, computers.
James Sampson owns a chain of wireless RXX stores in the Washington, D.C. area. Almost all his components are shipped from China. What used to take 3 to 5 days now takes up to 8 weeks.
It's affecting our end customer. It's affecting the pricing that we have to give to customers because shipping prices are going up. And it's affecting the time that we can actually complete repairs.
As a small business owner, Sampson says he can't compete with the huge national chains that are now contracting their own container ships.
It's going to have some long-term effects on us, without a doubt.
Well, good afternoon, everyone.
President Joe Biden says California ports have agreed to operate around the clock, including weekends, to clear out the logjam. Beyond that, he says the U.S. needs to invest in the U.S.
Never again should our country and our economy be unable to make critical products we need because we don't have access to materials to make that product.
Chef O'Grady agrees, but for now, she has to rely on the global economy.
I'm not certain that it affects our bottom line, but it certainly affects our stress level. And it takes me away from things that I really need to be doing.
Like whipping up dishes, not chasing down missing equipment. Carolyn Crisuti, VOA News, Arlington, Virginia.
Be sure to read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. In other news, worsening climate change requires the United States do much more to track and protect refugees fleeing natural disasters. The Biden administration said in a series of assessments Thursday on the growing challenges facing the country as the world warms. Separate assessments from U.S. intelligence and defense officials outlined the rise of global tensions and resulting heightened threats to U.S. security, outlining a more dangerous world with more desperate leaders and peoples as temperatures rise. One, a first-of-its-kind intelligence assessment on climate change, identified 11 nations of greatest concern, from Haiti to Afghanistan. The report recommends a number of steps, including doing more to monitor for floods or other disasters likely to create climate refugees, targeting U.S. aid that allows people to ride out storms in their own countries, and working with Congress to consider humanitarian visas and other protections for those displaced by extreme weather. The report also urges the creation of a task force to coordinate U.S. management of climate change and migration across government, from climate scientists to aid and security officials.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
News from VOA Asia. About a dozen women protested in Kabul on Thursday, demanding access to education and work, as the Taliban has restricted women's rights since their takeover in August. All the important stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. The UN Development Program is launching a plan to help millions of Afghans who have lost their livelihoods in the midst of the recent political turmoil regain the ability to earn a living and feed their families. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
The speed and degree to which Afghanistan's economy has imploded since the Taliban gained control of the country in mid-August is breathtaking. Most affected are the country's 38 million people, many of whom are unable to support themselves. The latest assessment by the UN Development Program forecasts 97% of households in Afghanistan could sink below the poverty line by early to mid-2022 if the country's political and economic crisis is not urgently addressed. UNDP Administrator Achim Steiner acknowledges the country is in desperate need of humanitarian assistance. At the same time, however, he says measures must be taken to keep the local economies going. He says international aid alone cannot keep 38 million Afghans alive.
We have to step in. We have to stabilize a people's economy. And in addition to saving lives in the immediate, we also have to save livelihoods, because otherwise we will confront indeed a scenario through this winter and into next year where millions and millions of Afghans are simply unable to stay on the land, in their homes, in their villages, and survive.
The UNDP has established a special trust fund for Afghanistan to protect the hard-won development gains the country has achieved over the past 20 years. Countries can channel funding for specific development and livelihood projects through this program. Kani Wignaraja is Assistant Secretary General and Director of the Regional Bureau for Asia-Pacific. She says the money will go directly to community groups and community members.
It will provide a cash for work to support small public works efforts. As Achim said, it will provide a temporary basic income for the most vulnerable, including elderly and disabled. It will work with a number of UN agencies, with international and national NGO partners who are on the ground.
UNDP estimates $667 million will be needed to cover the cost of livelihood activities for 4.5 million Afghans in the first year. It hopes to double the number of beneficiaries in the second year if it is able to double the size of funding. The agency says the launch of the trust fund is off to a good start, with a contribution of 50 million euros from the German government. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia, South Korea's first domestically produced space rocket reached its desired altitude but failed to deliver a dummy payload into orbit in its first test launch on Thursday. South Korea's president still described the test as an excellent accomplishment that takes the country a step further in its pursuit of a satellite launch program. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. North Korea has conducted 8 missile launches this year. The latest was this week's test of a submarine-launched ballistic missile. But South Koreans, who have the most to lose from a conflict with North Korea, aren't overly concerned. More from VOA's Bill Gallo in Seoul.
Every North Korean missile launch can feel intense. North Korean missile footage often has a Hollywood flair, complete with multiple camera angles and even drone shots. International media coverage can also convey a sense of crisis. From the outside, it's easy to look at the headlines and assume South Koreans are probably very concerned. But talk to them and you'll probably hear a different story. Yu Ye-jin is a Seoul resident. She says her first thought was, well, they did it again. The truth is, she says, South Koreans don't care about North Korean launches. Another Seoul resident, Song Tae-ho, says he feels as if he is immune to the news of North Korean missile tests. He just doesn't see it as a big deal. A lot of it may be alarm fatigue. North Korea has tested about 150 missiles since 1984. Seoul-based analyst Choi Jin-bong says people are used to North Korea's tests.
This is our life. This is our situation between North and South Korea. We have tension between those two countries, but South Korean people think North Korea not gonna attack us. That's our belief.
It's been decades since major hostilities, and more than 10 years since the most recent notable violence, when North Korea shelled a South Korean island and sunk a warship, killing 50 people. But polls suggest young people who didn't experience the 1950s Korean War don't care as much about the North. Journalist Kim Hae-in says scary reports about North Korea just aren't as convincing these days. And many of the South Korean reports turn out to be inaccurate anyway, she says. Another reason for confidence is South Korea's own military. South Korea is developing more of its own weapons, such as these fighter jets on display at a defense expo this week. President Moon Jae-in, who arrived at the event in one of the new jets, says the state-of-the-art weapons should help South Korea feel secure, that it can keep the peace. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
The U.S. ambassador to the United Nations called on North Korea Wednesday to refrain from further provocative actions and engage in, quote, sustained and substantive dialogues, end quote. Ambassador Linda Thomas Greenfield said of Pyongyang's announced submarine-launched ballistic missile test on Tuesday, quote, "We should not look at this most recent launch in isolation. It is the latest in a series of reckless provocations," end quote. She spoke to reporters ahead of a closed-door Security Council meeting called by the United States, Britain, and France to discuss the launches. Coffee grows wild in Afghanistan, and it has been the country's biggest cash crop for years. But the opium produced from poppy could have a rival from a different plant that grows wild in Afghanistan. Part two of our series, Afghanistan's Addiction Crisis, shows us the depth and breadth of Afghanistan's drug trade, narrated by VOA's Ann Ball.
As a country, Afghanistan deals with insecurity, endless wars, corruption, poverty, a weak economy, high unemployment, and other challenges. But it also faces the problem of homegrown addiction and drug use. Some describe drug addiction in this country as a hidden tsunami, a large wave ready to crush what is in its wake. Despite billions of dollars in international aid, government projects, and efforts, Afghanistan remains the world's top cultivator of poppy, the plant used to make opium and heroin. The country is the world's largest narcotics producer. A joint survey by the Afghan government and the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, UNODC, shows they are losing the war to eradicate the crop. It says in 2020, poppy cultivation was up 37% in Afghanistan. The report found that last year, poppy was cultivated on nearly a quarter of a million hectares of land in 22 of the 34 provinces. Most of the opium is smuggled abroad, but what remains is a problem at home.
We're seeing high levels of opiate use in the country. We are seeing high levels of cannabis use in the country. And an emerging threat that we've been noticing for the last number of years is definitely methamphetamine and other amphetamine-type stimulants in the country. So these are all increasing the threat to the population exponentially. So we have drug production and then rising drug use in the country, which is a severe threat to the people of the country.
Drug production and addiction go hand in hand, and both are on the rise. User statistics are hard to come by. The most recent numbers are from a 2015 survey. It was conducted by INL, the Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs, and the Afghan government. It found that 2.5 to 3.5 million Afghans are directly or indirectly addicted to drugs. At that time, one in three families tested positive for drugs, and the rural areas were three times worse than in the cities.
Unfortunately, drug addiction is not diminishing. It is increasing. And that's why we think that the number that was estimated in the past has increased even more.
Meanwhile, a recent report shows crystal methamphetamine, also called crystal or meth, is a growing problem in Afghanistan. Last November, the European Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction reported that the country is becoming a significant global producer of meth. One reason is drug traffickers discovered that the Ephedra plant, which commonly grows wild in parts of Afghanistan, can be used to make meth. The report focused on the production of meth in Bakwa district. It called the preliminary findings worrying, adding there is potential for meth to rival the country's production of opiates.
VOA's Afghan service reported this series before the U.S. pullout and Taliban returned to power. You have been listening to VOA Asia. Be sure to like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Keith Lane, Chris Cascao, Jessica Stone, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Amy Heibels in Washington. Now go and make it a great day.